This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Hello, listeners. If you're hearing this, I'm going to assume you're at least interested in money and understanding the economy and finances. And some of us want our kids to have that knowledge, too. Check out Million Bazillion, Marketplace's award-winning kids podcast that breaks down money to help dollars make more sense. A whole new season is out now. Million Bazillion is presented in partnership with Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Greenlight helps kids and teens learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. You can learn more at greenlight.com/million. And tune in to Million Bazillion wherever you find your favorite podcasts.
Well, that was a week, huh? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is a Friday at the end of a busy economic week. Today is the 28th day of July. Good as always to have you along, everybody. So busy has it been, in fact, that we're just going to get right to it. Neela Richardson is at ADP. Sudeep Reddy is at Politico on a shaky phone line, we should say. I think it's Zoom, actually. Hey, everybody.
Hey, Kai.
Hi, Kai.
So, Neela, let me start with you. And I would like to reference my prior remark about this having been a week. So let's take it in totality. We had the Fed meeting at which, yes, they raised interest rates, but Chair Powell said, you know, the economy is doing pretty well, just not as well as we want. Inflation's still too high. Then we got gross domestic product. It's stronger than everybody thought. It's 2.4% on the quarter. Inflation this morning, the Fed's favorite reading, PCE, lower than everybody thought it was going to be. Contextualize that for me, would you? And then help me understand why everybody still doesn't really like this economy.
Yeah, so everything is looking pretty good, right? Not only did the second quarter numbers come out better than expected, remember that the first quarter was revised up too. So we're looking at an economy that if you wrap in the jobs market and you get some jobs data next week, that looks like it's heading towards a soft landing. And it's weird because it's not what people expect. And people like certainty. Markets thrive on certainty. And what everyone was certain about just 6 months ago is that there was going to be a recession this year. And it doesn't look like that yet. We're heading into the second half of the year. There's some concern that the consumer, which is the bulk of the economy, may be petering out. But right now, if you look behind us, things look pretty good.
Well, Sudeep, look forward for us. How do we get from here to a recession?
There are a lot of ways that could happen. there are none that we could like really clearly see right now. The fact that this year has basically gone far better than anyone expected, and last year went worse than a lot of people expected. We're just in a weird zone right now where we are, 16 months from the start of rate hikes. We're obviously at a 22-year high for interest rates. Anyone who's trying to buy a house recognizes that. Not many people are worried about it on the corporate front. So there are a lot of things that are okay despite interest rates being this high. But we're only 4 months from the Silicon Valley Bank debacle, which led to a lot of tightening, or at least some tightening in credit. Mm-hmm. And that usually takes 6 to 9 months to see carry over into the economy. There are other things that are happening. It still feels like you need some kind of shock, some type of outside event where people will say, oh, crap, that's the thing that sent us down, because it's definitely not happening naturally through interest rates in this moment. And that's a very good sign. It's not solving the Fed's job, but it's making it actually a lot easier than they expected it would be to be coming out of this range.
All right, right. So, Neil, I'm going to play a piece of tape for you here. It's from Gina Smilek, the New York Times, and one of our Friday regulars, as we all know, asking the Fed chair whether the data that's coming in is sort of a good news, bad news thing. Here you go.
We've seen the Barbie movie numbers. We've seen everyone going to Taylor Swift concerts this summer. It seems like the American consumer is in pretty good shape.
Which is to say the American consumer is still spending money, which is a good thing. But the American consumer is still spending money, which may be a bad thing because it's helping to drive what inflation there is. Help me out with that.
Yeah, I love Gianna's question because it really points to the pop cultural moment that we find ourselves in.
I just wanted to get Barbie and Taylor on the show. That's all I wanted to do.
Please, always, always, never pass that up. But yes, the consumer is still strong, still resilient, still spending, but they're spending at higher rates. And that's the question. That's the other shoe to drop that Sudeep is alluding to. That's why people feel a little queasy, because if you look at like auto loan delinquency is really, really cool topic that people probably aren't looking at. If you look at other things like credit card rates, they're going up. And the cushion from all that direct payments from the emergency funds tied to COVID, that cushion is starting to go down pretty quickly right now. Savings rates are down. And so the question is, will the consumer keep spending in the second half of the year? Yeah, they might go to a movie, but they're going to bypass a house or a car or these big ticket items that really drive the economy forward.
Sudeep, we spent some time on the program this week talking about the long and variable lag with which monetary policy works. Fed Chair Powell talks about it a lot. And I guess the question I want to ask you about it is, what's the risk of the Fed overshooting here and continuing to tighten too long when the data is really starting objectively to look pretty good?
There is a risk. So far, the Fed is really inching along here and doing further interest rate increases. It's not really showing up that much more in market rates. The biggest effect right now is the Fed sending the signal that they're not going to have to cut interest rates because of some kind of slowdown. That just signals to the market that, yeah, rates are going to stay higher. It's just a very weird zone. There are debates within the Fed. Some of them have actually landed in Fed official speeches about how long and how variable that lag really is. And until we can answer that in a modern economy, the economy of today is different from when interest rates were at this level 22 years ago, and obviously different from when Milton Friedman was thinking about it. And so it's really hard to know how quickly this stuff goes through. And there have been a lot of weird things in the economy over the last few years. The fact that so many people were able to buy houses at lower interest rates means that the housing effect isn't as strong now. The fact that there were so many people who were switching jobs in 2021 means that the labor market, there's labor hoarding going on by companies, and they're not going to cut jobs the first sign of trouble. All of that makes this a very difficult exercise to actually invoke your inner Milton Friedman at this moment.
Sorry. Okay, Neil, last one to you. You got 30 seconds to answer it. What is the thing you are looking at in the next, 60 days to give you some sense of this economy?
Kai, do you really have to ask? I'm looking at next week. I'm looking at the labor market. Yeah, I'm looking at wages.
I didn't have to ask, but I kind of had to.
Not me. Wages are the thing. This is the bridge between the labor market and the inflation rate. If the wages keep going down, then the Fed can turn their "I don't know what we'll do in September" stance that they've introduced in this latest policy press conference to, yeah, we know the direction of the economy. We can get core inflation, which is really being impacted by services, under wraps. And then the second piece, the second data point of the summer, is the housing market, because shelter costs are driving inflation right now. If there is a sustained reduction in housing, whether rental or for sale houses, and that's a huge if, and I have huge doubts around that, then the Fed can really start claiming victory. But, they still have to wait for those couple of data points, but the first one comes pretty quickly here.
All right. We will talk wages in a minute with Justin Ho. Otherwise, that's Neil Richardson at ADP, Sudeep Reddy at Politico. Thanks, you two, on a super hot Friday where you two are. I appreciate it.
Have a good
weekend.
On Wall Street today, after a day of taking a breather, it looks like the rally is back on. We will have the details when we do the numbers. All right, so as promised, wages. One of the big pieces of data we got from the Labor Department today was something called the Employment Cost Index. It's a quarterly report about the cost of employment, the wages and benefits that companies are paying their people. Overall, compensation was up 1% from the first to the second quarter of this year. That is the slowest pace in 2 years. But it's welcome news for a central bank that's been trying to get inflation under control, in part by slowing the labor market. But even slowing wage growth is wage growth. And as Marketplace's Justin Ho reports, the ever-important American consumer still does have a whole lot of purchasing power.
A year ago, inflation was eating away at people's wage gains. But around the end of 2022, that started to change, says Preston Mui, senior economist with Employ America.
And right now, wages are growing faster than prices. So in real terms, on average, people's purchasing power is increasing.
Mui says that's because prices have been rising more slowly, but a lot of employers are still struggling to hire.
That's a good environment for workers. It gives them more bargaining power. It gives them opportunities to find better jobs.
If wage growth continues to slow down, Yana Rogers, who directs the Center for Women and Work at Rutgers University, says disadvantaged groups could have the hardest time keeping up with rising prices.
And on average, women and household heads of color are less able to absorb price increases because of average lower incomes.
Thing is, people on the lower end of the pay scale have seen some of the biggest wage gains over the last couple of years, says Betsy Stevenson, an economics professor at the University of Michigan.
While that's starting to slow down, we don't see signs so far that the gains made are being undone.
Stevenson says that's because during the pandemic, a lot of employers invested in better technology that helped their existing workers do more, like self-checkout stations that let workers help more customers at once.
That makes people more productive. It makes it easier to pay them more because their value added is higher.
And those kind of improvements, Stevenson says, are never going away. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
All right, we started the week going strong on housing, home prices, home sales, pending home sales. But it has been a while since we talked about rent. And there's some good news this week on the rental front. Rents have dropped nationally for the first time since early 2021. According to both Realtor.com and Apartment List, asking rents are now about 1% lower than they were a year ago. Marketplace's Samantha Fields has that one.
A 1% drop in rent may not sound like much, but Igor Popov, chief economist at Apartment List, says it actually is significant.
At the end of 2021, we were tracking rent growth on the order of 17% nationally.
So to go from that to a 1% drop,
it's dramatic in context.
Now, rents aren't coming down everywhere. Danielle Hale, chief economist at Realtor.com, says they've come down the most in the West and some in the South. But
we're still seeing rents grow in the Northeast and the Midwest. They are slowing, but they continue to increase.
In the Northeast, that seems to be largely because the job market is so strong right now, she says. And in the Midwest, rents are still relatively affordable, which means they have more room to grow than in other parts of the country, where
rents are very close to long-term highs, and affordability has become a problem.
That is one reason rents are slowing and even dropping now in some places. They've just gotten too high.
They've risen a lot faster than incomes have.
Lisa Sturdivant, chief economist at Bright MLS, says another reason rents are coming down is that more supply is coming online.
We've been thinking about home prices and rents rising and what can we do to improve affordability for folks. And frankly, the only solution is to increase the amount of supply out there.
And that's finally happening. But Sturdivant says it could be short-lived. The Fed's interest rate hikes are making it harder for a lot of builders to get financing. I'm Samantha Fields for Marketplace.
Brick-and-mortar bookstores, as we all know, have been moving online or disappearing altogether for years. A bit more than 10 years ago, there were almost 17,000 actual bookstores in this economy. In 2020, less than 11,000. But bookstores are not repeat, not down for the count. Over the past 5 years, the number of bookstores in the United States has grown by about 0.3% a year. It's not huge, but it's not nothing. So we got LaTanya Devon back on the phone. She's the owner of Bronx Bound Books, which is a mobile bookstore in the Bronx, New York.
The summer is pretty good for us because we do sell books at farmers markets. So we are very busy. August through December are our busiest months. Bronx Bound Books offers bookmobile rentals. And when you rent the bus, the books are free. When I first brought up offering bus rental services, it was such a new thing for people. They couldn't see where I wanted to go with it. But I knew that starting this business, the goal was to get books into people's hands. So although we were selling books and doing great, the access was still limited. And honestly, the bus rental has been the biggest game changer. So when you are selling books traditionally, you hope that people will come and buy, and you never know how much you're going to sell that day. But when you're doing a bus rental, let's say there's a school with 600 kids, I've already done it long enough to know that, okay, 600 kids, that's about 5 hours at that school. So I'm able to calculate and project into the future. What's special to me about this mission is when I see the kids out in the community, they're like, hey, LaTanya, oh, can I come inside? So when they see me at their school, they already know what to expect. The kids know that they can come and they can explore and the space is theirs because that's what it was built for. One kid, he saw me at the farmer's market and he said, you were at my school, you know, why are you here? I said, because I'm everywhere. In October, I'm actually moving into the mall at Bay Plaza. We're starting off with a kiosk and we're going to bring some author events. In 2016, Barnes & Noble left and never returned. And for it to be taken away from the community partly inspired my mission. It felt good to sell books, but this feels even better.
Coming up,
the Grateful Dead's the ultimate American freedom band.
I mean, who am I to argue, right? First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial's up 176 points, about a half percent, 35,459. The NASDAQ jumped 266, 1.9%, hence the really happy music, 14,316. The S&P 500 lifted 44 points, 1%. 45.82. For the week, the Dow gained 0.7%, the NASDAQ up about 2%, S&P 500 up 1%. Heard from Justin Ho about consumers' purchasing power, so looking at some likely spending spots. Wayfair gained 6.3%, Macy's rose about 0.1%, Albertsons bagged 1%, Smithfield's talking rents. So, some rental broker stocks, why don't we? CoStar Group, which owns Apartments.com, added 1.9%, Zillow rose almost 2.5% today. Bond prices were up. Yield on the 10-year T-note down to 3.95%. You're listening to Marketplace. Traditional revenue sources for public media and media at large are declining this year, and we at Marketplace are not immune to those trends. We're currently tracking behind target for this budget year. We're tightening up our expenses, yes, but the need for trusted, grounded, fact-based reporting is as pressing as ever, and we simply cannot cut back on our mission. So we're turning to the listeners like you. Please step up now and invest in Marketplace. If you haven't given yet, now's the time. Go to marketplace.org/donate.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Ascensus, helping people dream bigger, aim higher, and save more with financial confidence. Unleash the power of your retirement savings plan with innovative technology that makes things easy, top-notch service from experts who care, and flexible solutions that can grow with you. For more than 40 years, Ascensus has been helping savers achieve their goals. We can help you achieve yours, too. Learn more at Ascensus.com. That's ASCENSUS.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. We started off today talking about inflation, of course, a big part of which has been higher prices in consumer packaged goods, a lot of the things you buy typically in the supermarket. Think Procter & Gamble, just for instance, purveyor of brands like Crest and Tide, Pampers, too. Anyway, P&G announced earnings this morning and did better than people had been guessing, those higher prices helping drive higher revenue. The company was a bit conservative, though, about what it's expecting in 2024, worried, like a lot of companies are, about how loyal consumers might stay to big brands in a good but uncertain economy. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has this one.
One thing that helps companies like Procter & Gamble maintain brand loyalty despite raising prices is basically consumer habits.
So many of our behaviors nowadays are particularly amenable to just keeping buying the same things, or you add to cart the same thing you ordered online last time.
Katie Thomas leads the Kearney Consumer Institute, but she says,
at some point, there just feels like there's going to have to be a correction. Prices can't keep going up at this clip and people continue to absorb them.
And that's probably why P&G is being cautious in growth forecasts for next year. Scott Davis is with the consulting firm Profit and says when prices go up for things consumers have to have, like toilet paper or toothpaste, they usually go to generic or private label brands.
Or they will look for another brand slash price tier from a company or an organization that they know and trust.
Which helps out companies like Procter & Gamble with tons of different brands under its umbrella at different price tiers.
Where if I can't afford Tide this time around, I'll go to Gain or I'll go to Ariel, you know, two of their other brands in the portfolio. Maybe not what I would have wanted to get with Tide, but I'll make it work with Gain or Ariel.
Which still adds to P&G's bottom line, but doesn't add as much to it. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
The obvious setup for our last piece today is what a long, strange trip it's been. This is the last summer that Dead and Company, the follow-on band, if you will, to the Grateful Dead, is going to be touring. And with an end to that roadshow may also come an end to Shakedown Street, the flea market slash tailgating party that happens out in the parking lot of each Dead and Company concert venue. And it turns out, as KQED's Izzy Bloom reports, the Deadheads and the vendors that cater to them kind of a mini economy all of their own.
In the hours before Dead & Company's San Francisco concert, there's a big crowd at Shakedown Street. Vendors in pop-up tents line the parking lot. And all kinds of formal and informal sales take place here. There's somebody trying to trade a joint for a hot dog.
Hot dog, guys! Make it, no reportera!
Several people wander the crowd offering balloons filled with nitrous oxide. Vendors offer cool beverages, grilled cheese sandwiches, synthetic flower crowns, and thigh-high tie-dye socks. Outside one pop-up tent, Brian Platsky lounges in a lawn chair. He's been a Shakedown Street vendor for 38 years and now sells Deadhead t-shirts. This is his full-time job, but he doesn't quite see it as work.
It's the opposite of working. Here's the difference. You guys go on vacation and leave your home. I go on vacation and go to work.
Platsky dropped out of high school at 15 to follow the band on tour. After a few years of vending, he says he started making a solid income.
This is just like a microcosm of a little society where money's generated, people have similar beliefs of the music, whatever the case is, but they conglomerate to sell their wares, share their times, and move on.
That rings true for another vendor named Erin Cadigan. She remembers going to her first show back in the 80s. She had a shaved head and wore combat boots.
I walked onto that first parking lot and was like, oh my God, there's an entire society of adults that seem to be functioning in space in exactly the way that I want to, and this is what I'm doing with my life.
Cadigan started selling art and traveling with the band. She even met her husband at Shakedown Street, and she now offers tarot card readings. Cadigan interprets a card for one would-be concert goer who doesn't have a ticket, and tonight's show is sold out.
This is creative manifestation. Whatever is manifesting in your life that you want to do, the time is now. Just go for it. Like, boom.
So you think I'm going to get into the show tonight?
Absolutely. Nice. Yes. Go. Why are you standing here? Go get a ticket.
This vendor community persisted even after lead singer Jerry Garcia died in 1995. When the latest offshoot Dead & Company formed, Joshua Hutchison became a fan. Now he's a vendor, too.
We are selling crystals, we are selling stickers, we're selling pins, we're selling beer and mixed drinks.
What are you making right now?
Right now I'm making a margarita for this sweet lady right here.
The lady takes a sip of her margarita and ambles away into the crowd. Grateful Dead Productions has fostered this fan-driven economy. In exchange for royalties, it provides vendors with the right to use the band's iconography, like the Dancing Bears and Steal Your Face Skull. Some vendors deal in small stuff to pay for food and gas, but others make this their entire career, like Brian Platsky, the t-shirt guy.
The Grateful Dead's the ultimate American freedom band. It never goes away. People want the freedom. They want to go celebrate that concept.
Even though Dead & Company says this is the final tour, Platsky is confident that demand for the band's merchandise and what it represents is here to stay. In San Francisco, I'm Izzy Bloom for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today. I don't know how you say recession in German, but they are out of the economic dip they were in the last quarter of last year and the first 3 months of this year. We got the new data this morning. It's not like they're growing. The German economy, the most important in the European Union, we should say, was literally flat April through June from the first quarter, but a win's a win. All right, we got to go. Here, though, is your moment of economic context. 15 cents. Does not sound like much, I know, but it is the increase in gas prices per gallon, regular, over the past week. That's from AAA. Do not sleep on energy costs, is what I'm saying here, people. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman, Marketplace's executive producer, is Nancy Fargali. Donna Tam is the executive editor. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you Monday, everybody. Have yourselves a great weekend, all right? This is APM.
My name is Lee Hawkins. I've been a journalist for over 25 years. On my new podcast, What Happened in Alabama, I get answers to some of the hardest questions about how things came to be for many Black Americans and the truth that must come before any reconciliation can happen. I investigate my family history, my upbringing in Minnesota, and my father's painful nightmares about growing up in Alabama. What Happened in Alabama is a new series confronting the cycles of trauma for myself, my family, and for many Black Americans. Listen now.